Hello! Welcome to the Dream 10X podcast. It's your boy JC.
And Dr. Capel.
And in this episode, 81, we are going to be reviewing the book, The Laws of Simplicity. I didn't put it in your face.
You didn't put it in my face. Wow, what's wrong?
The Laws of Simplicity. this book is by John Maeda, and he used to be, and it may still be, a professor at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and this book came out in 2006, I believe, and I'm not sure how I came upon it, but he's a designer, and...
When you say designer, is that computer designer, or is that, like,
I believe it's mostly related to... I think he's a software designer. I haven't looked him up, so I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But I think that's mostly what he was kind of gearing this toward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, generally speaking, he provides 10 laws of what he has, as a designer, how he approaches simplicity and trying to make things simple and beautiful.
Oh, like minimalistic.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is my 5 key takeaways from this book real quick. Number 1, reduce. Makes sense. Take things away in order to make them as simple as possible until... You've taken so many things away that you realize, we probably need to add something back to make it functional. So reduce as much as you can in a system, and only keep what you absolutely need to have functionality in software or hardware or whatever it is.
Go ahead. You know, I was going to say I have a funny story, but you can do your thing first.
Okay. This remote is a perfect example. This is one of our remotes, and I don't know what most of the time I pick this remote up. I don't know how to interact with the TV, and it's always just trying to figure. There's all these buttons down here. I've never used them. There are these up and down and plus and minuses and the home. It's usually the home button that I use, and I usually use this circle right here. Mm-hmm. I hardly ever use any of these buttons, so why are they there?
I use the buttons.
You do use the buttons? Why do you use the buttons?
Because it's easier. Excuse me, it's easier to find what I need quickly. Especially if I want to go straight to that.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't even know what that did.
So it's the different programs that you use that has the buttons on the software. So I hit that button, it takes it right to it versus having to search for it.
Okay, did you read a manual for that?
No, it was pretty clear when I looked at it.
I never even considered those buttons down there.
Really?
Never even crossed my mind. It's this round circle here I pretty much exclusively use.
So it's funny because, like, I guess what's simple isn't necessarily universally simple.
True. That's true. That's a good point.
So, like, the funny story I was going to share, too, is my colleague Eric, he's awesome, and we're both comic book geeks. I'm a PhD, and he has, like, he jokes he has 3 associate's degrees, which he does. He has 3 associate's degrees, and that's his highest level of education. And so I come off with, like, stupid big words and make things really complicated, which I don't mean to do, but... That's how I think when I put all these systems together, and he comes at it with crayons and and, like, really minimalizes it, and then I build it back up, and so we really meet in the middle to get the best product that everybody understands. And we joke about this at work too, so
that's cool.
Yeah, so it's like I like that the reduction.
That's perfect.
And then bring it together,
and that really speaks to a lot of what he says in his way he approaches trying to come up with optimal simplistic designs. And he showed a picture of an oscillating, an oscillating wave thing with simplicity being at one apogee at the bottom and complexity being at the top or another apogee.
Yeah.
And how you can present the user with an oscillating system that represents simplicity and complexity to kind of draw the user in and help them learn and be engaged in a product. So I thought
that's really smart.
That was a different way, interesting way to use my overused word, interesting way of looking things.
I use it too, pretty much.
He also talks about in this first takeaway, reducing things, how he talked to a designer at Ferrari, and this guy at Ferrari mentioned how the Ferrari cars actually use fewer parts than most other cars on the market.
Interesting, huh?
But those cars are far more quality parts than what you generally find in another car.
So higher quality, less parts for a better product.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Huh.
Takeaway number two, savings in time can help improve the simplicity of an object. Obviously, the opposite of that is something, if you're working with software, some piece of software, and it takes forever to complete the task, then that just seems, you know, annoying and complex, and you don't want to use it. Whereas if it's really fast, if it's really responsive, speed kills all the time. The faster it is, the better. And you're more likelihood of you saying, wow, this is a really simple, easy to use product.
Yeah, makes sense.
Number three takeaway, learn. Knowledge makes everything simpler, according to him. And I tend to agree with that. He mentions how certain metaphors, simple icons can help teach a user how to use an application, like the trash can. The Netflix button means launch Netflix. I've never even seen it though. I don't know. The round circle is like, oh, I wonder what this does. Let me play with that a little bit. I get it. I get the round circle. Forget everything else. What was I saying? The simple metaphors, like the trash can on the Mac, right? I think it's on the Mac? Is the trash can on the Mac?
It's on both.
It's on both?
Yeah, one's recycle, one's trash can.
Okay, yeah. So that's pretty obvious. You just drag stuff to that, and that's for delete. That's an easy-to-understand metaphor that doesn't require a manual or anything like that. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the desktop icon.
Yeah.
So, being able to easily teach your user through simplicity is another tenet.
And pictures, like that, the brain really likes pictures and it responds to pictures faster.
Yes.
So
I rather like than that. Have to read, exactly. Read a manual. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else was I going to say about this? It's kind of related, but a simple way of teaching somebody something is through repetition. Just simply repeating something over and over and over and helping a learner build those neural pathways and build up that myelin or whatever. So just repeating something over and over and practicing something over and over is a great way to learn. It's a simple way of learning.
So that's actually what I'm doing in the weightlifting. So I'm teaching weightlifting for rowers specifically. And so every time I teach them a new exercise, I'm like, just do it. Do as many as you can, play with it a little bit, just that aspect of play. And then as they, you know, then the next session we do it again, the same exercise, and then we start to get more refined. Okay, so you need to make sure your weight's in your heels. You need to make sure all these things are happening. And then so we repeat it again, like the next class. And then a couple classes later, once they've had a chance to play, they're refining it, then I get like really nitpicky, like make sure your core's engaged, all these other things, make sure your head's up. And so it was a different way to learn where, you know, you just start with that play and experimenting with it, and then you get more refined, more refined, more refined.
Yeah, so simple steps that you add on to to progressively get more and more complex and more fit.
Yeah.
As a result.
Exactly. Now they're rock stars. Very proud.
Number four, he provides a little story about how he had tea with one of the design icons in Japan. His name is Iko Tanaka. And the tea party, I just thought it was interesting about how he talked about this as, you know, learning more about Japanese culture and how tea party is called, or a tea ceremony, not party, tea ceremony. is called Chanoyu. Is a formal Japanese tea ceremony.
That's really cool.
And how, I don't know a lot about it, but I'm sure there's a lot of tradition involved in it and a lot of ceremony involved. And he does mention the tea cups that were passed around, which were not perfectly shaped.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of imperfection. Like it sounded like they were like clay glasses or something that weren't, perfect ovals or circles or whatever.
Yeah.
And how everything else was perfect. The way the actual container that the tea was held in and how it was presented and All everything else was perfect in how the dichotomy or the aesthetic difference between the actual teacups and the presentation and everything else associated with it added to that simple nature of those teacups added to the perfection of the whole ceremony.
Love that.
And the aesthetic experience. And how the designer who was exercising this tea ceremony, Mr. Tanaka, was a 70-year-old man who had been practicing this ceremony for, you know, forever.
Yeah.
And was still refining his craft in just the presentation of the tea and the ceremony.
Amazing.
And the discipline involved in that. So I just was trying to envision what that would be like. And maybe I'll try to find a video on that to see what it's really about. But
we should just go to Japan, check it out.
Yeah. I thought that would be cool after, you know, reading about that. Also, my fifth takeaway was a term called aichaku, which is a Japanese term for a sense of attachment one can have to an object.
Aichaku. Oh, that's a Buddhist thing.
So it's very similar to wabi-sabi that we were talked about in the last episode, or woo. Aichaku is your attachment to a given object, and I immediately thought of a trip that I had just taken down to South Carolina with my daughter Evelyn to buy an old used RV that I'm planning to renovate.
It's really cool.
And I felt a sense of attachment to this thing, and my daughter Evelyn said, "Hey, you need to give it a name." I was like, "Oh yeah, a name just popped in my head, Yuki." So now her name is Yuki, and I have an attachment to this RV trailer that I want to renovate, and so that's my I have an aichaku, I guess, with this RV. So those are my five takeaways from this book. I have one other comment. The author, John Maeda, references his accompanying website in the book. It's called thelawsofsimplicity.com, and it doesn't have TLS security on it. I just gotta say, gotta put HTTPS on there so it works. You're at MIT, come on. You gotta make your website secure. So anyway, that's my five takeaways, episode 81, and we will see you next book, Dream 10X out.
Bye.